Right, we're back. Conceptual framework again. And we're on agenda paper 3, which is talking about stewardship, duties, and liability. The board issued new chapters 1 and 3 of the conceptual framework in 2010. Chapter 1 deals with the objectives of financial reporting, and Chapter 3 deals with what it calls the qualitative characteristics, which is the characteristics that financial information has to have if it's going to be useful to users. So one question the board had to face when it started the current work was whether it should keep Chapter 1 and 3 as they were, or whether it should do any further work on them. And the board's preliminary view was that it should not look to make fundamental changes to Chapter 1 and 3 at this stage. A couple of reasons for that. One is that there was a lot of due process developing those chapters, and the board was comfortable that they provided a good basis for developing the rest of the framework. And secondly, there's no real reason to think that if we started a fundamental reconsideration that we would end up in a very different place, or that would have a very significant effect on the rest of the framework. And there are three areas that people have tended to raise in questioning whether that approach is the correct one. And the three areas are probably quite closely linked to each other. So the first of them is stewardship, and that's related to the objective of financial reporting. And the question here really is about how many objectives there should be and what should be the relationship among them. The objective, as it's set out in the framework, is discussed in paragraph, or it's mentioned in paragraph 5 of this paper, really. And the objective is described as being to provide users with information that they can use for decisions. And the framework makes it clear that decisions, they include buy, sell and hold decisions. They also include decisions about, for example, holding management to account, management remuneration, hiring and firing management, and so on. So it's not just about buying and selling shares, but it's decisions slightly more generally. There's also some discussion of what people sometimes think of as stewardship or accountability, and that's picked up really in the quote that's listed in paragraph, just after paragraph 5 in this paper, which is that part of the information that's needed is information about how effectively and efficiently management have discharged their responsibilities to use the entity's assets. And I think a lot of the debate here is about whether that notion of stewardship should be a separate objective or whether it's sufficient to include it within the overall objective of providing information that's useful for decisions. There's probably also a slight second-order debate about whether the word stewardship, or perhaps another word such as accountability, should be included directly in the framework. The approach the board took was to provide that description that's in the paragraph that's quoted here, but not actually to label it. And the board felt that using the label, particularly stewardship perhaps, might be a bit difficult to understand in some contexts or in some cultures perhaps. The second issue is reliability. And we've now moved on to Chapter 3, which is talking about these qualitative characteristics, the characteristics of useful financial information. The previous version of the framework talked about information needing to have two qualities, if you like. That's relevance and reliability. And it also said that sometimes there's a trade-off between relevance and reliability. Current version of the framework still has relevance, but it doesn't have that label of reliability anymore. Instead, it talks about faithful representation. There's a table after paragraph 11 which tries to summarise fairly succinctly what the difference is between the old notion of reliability and the new notion of faithful representation. And actually, it turns out that there's not really a huge difference. If you look in the left-hand column, most of the elements in there are also in the new notion of faithful representation. There are probably three things that are worth picking up. One is prudence, and I'll come back to prudence in a minute because that's the third issue I wanted to discuss. Substance over form was mentioned there explicitly in the 2010 version as a sort of separate component of reliability. It's not mentioned separately in the new one because it was really felt that faithful representation already includes that notion fairly clearly. It wasn't necessary to expand on it any more explicitly. And then the third nuance, perhaps, that was in the old one, and it's perhaps not in the new one, is if you look at the second bullet point, it talks about information being reliable if users can depend on it to give a faithful representation. So perhaps the one nuance that might not be as clear in the new version is that notion of users can depend on it. And I suspect a lot of the debate is about whether we should put it more explicitly, something about whether users can rely on the information. So I think in terms of reliability, there are probably three areas of debate. One is the terminology. I think people haven't got used to the notion of faithful representation. It's a bit of a mouthful. So we used to talk about reliability. I just think they find it a little more uncomfortable when introducing it into a casual conversation. I think there's possibly this notion of it can be depended on. And I think the other thing that people feel might have been lost is the notion of a trade-off between relevance and the old notion of reliability. The notion that sometimes something might be relevant, but it's not reliable enough to bring it into the financial statements. I think the new version of the framework doesn't have that notion of a trade-off anymore. It says you pick some information that's relevant. If you can provide a faithful representation with that information, that's fine. If you can't provide a faithful representation, go back and look for some other relevant information that you can provide. So the notion of a trade-off, I think, isn't there in quite the same form.
Yeah, one question, because it relates, these points relate to information,
yeah.
Whereas we're talking about conceptual framework.
Yeah.
And I think conceptual framework, is it for the preparer, or is it for the standard setter? Is it that the standard should provide information, or should it be that is this like a guide for the preparer? Please provide information requested by the standard that is complete, neutral, and free from error. Because the standard could be, for example, please provide, we deem it appropriate that inventory is at historical cost or the lower of historical cost and current value. Huh? Then you can say the standard is not neutral because it's more or less biased to the lower of the two. But you can ask for information. So the standard, you can obviously say it's not neutral, but you can ask the preparer to provide the information in a neutral way within the standard. It's to me not clear whether this is guidance for creating standards or whether this is guidance for providing information to comply with the standard.
The existing framework says the framework has a lot of uses. One use is for the board, another use is for preparers, another is users, auditors, regulators, and there's a long list. For the discussion paper, we suggested that it's actually probably more useful to say that the primary audience is really the board, and that it's a tool to help the board write standards. It does have secondary uses. The most important secondary use is that if there isn't a specific standard that covers your transaction, then people are told to look at other standards and also to look at the framework. So it will help prepare us fill in the gaps. But we think that it's probably best to direct it in the first instance more at the board than at the preparer.
So, but the standard here, if you read it in, I'm a bit troubled by the semantics, as it says, the standard, so let me fill that out, to be useful, information that the standard provides, or information in the standards, should be reliable. That doesn't make sense.
It's not information in the standard, it's that the information that the standard calls for should have these kinds of characteristics.
Okay.
So when the board tries to decide what should be recognized in the financial statements or disclosed in the notes, we look to these characteristics, and if something has these characteristics, then we should require it to be recognized or disclosed.
Can we, sorry, slightly interrupt, this is a very sort of narrow detailed discussion, and I wonder if we could actually draw it out to the much, much broader point. This seems to me to be a massive political error that the ISB made when they changed the wording. And you've then spent a number of years, and Hans Hogevorst has very articulately explained why the wording change doesn't matter, because we're still doing the same stuff we were, which is fine, and I accept what he says, and he and other people have put forward some very convincing arguments. You've sort of summarised them very neatly here. So why, if it doesn't matter, then you find a way of putting the words back in? Because you knock out rafts of opposition and political noise and unhelpful comment if by, just for example, putting a little sort of footnote in the conceptual framework, you've got the paragraph on page 3, just to say sort of at the bottom, oh, by the way, some people refer to this as stewardship. It says it in the basis of conclusions, it says it elsewhere. Why not put it in the conceptual framework as a little asterisk?
Is your comment related to stewardship or the three terms? I think the answer is different for the three.
It may well be, but I think that's a specific point about stewardship. I mean, you're so close to saying you really still got stewardship in there. You might as well just say you've got stewardship in there, even if you don't want to actually use the word in the paragraph. Find a way of getting it in there somewhere. But on the other two, I think the broad approach should still be the same, that you are, with all of these things, you are finding ways to say to people, don't worry, it's still in there, even though you can't find the word. So, well, just try and find ways of solving the political problem, which you've got, which would allow you to do lots of other things instead.
But I think the political problem is that I read, in the case of prudence, there was a paper, and I forget which one it was, which tried to say that prudence was... I apologize for the formulation was they claimed that prudence was basically the same thing as what the ISB is saying, and therefore put it in. And then you read their arguments and you realize prudence really is not about neutrality, it's about blatantly building a margin in. And that was the whole argument. They said one thing and they did something else. So to the extent that, my response to you on the case of stewardship, to the extent that you are in the camp that stewardship isn't code for something else, my argument, and that, as I was reading this, my argument was, I don't really, to that definition of stewardship, I don't care if you throw the word in, it doesn't bother me, I agree with you, in or out, and if we could defang some of the criticism by throwing in, and that's why I asked you about stewardship, because I think it's actually possible to do it for stewardship. In the case of prudence, the problem with prudence is it's being used to, the way it's being used, and by the people who argue it, although they claim it's not the case, what you read carefully what they're saying, and they're saying is build in margins. So assets are underestimated and liabilities are overestimated. It's not neutrality. So, my comment on prudence is, if it keeps Peter happy and he's not, you know, sort of the rag of the edge, which I know he's not, I'll let him have prudence. And end the story.
Do you mean stewardship?
Stewardship. I meant stewardship.
That was rather imprudent.
No, you're right. But for this, you know, I think you have some. So for stewardship, I read it, I understand it. I think they well documented it, but the problem is for stewardship, they're really saying there is a core element there that's valid, and the board is saying it's there. And to your point, if it's really there, if it stops all the political, fine. Why don't you put it as a footnote? Don't do it for the other two, but for that one, okay.
Yeah, I sort of agree with both of you. I mean, you there might be a little bit of scope of putting in somewhere prudence in the sense of caution. I mean, actually, with the old wording.
You meant prudence, right?
Yeah, prudence. I mean, the old wording is quite elegant, isn't it? In that sense, it makes absolutely clear it's prudence in the sense of caution, but not. Although, I think the prudence, the people who want prudence, are actually those opponents are implacable because they. Are against all sorts of other things, including...
The problem with prudence is that prudence is used by people who do not want neutrality.
I know that.
That's the problem with that.
I know that, and I've written quite a few things on that subject. On reliability, I think that's another interesting one. I sort of got a bit of a romantic notion that maybe that perhaps could be built back in. And then we had an interesting discussion about that at our financial reporting committee. And I think it's a bit disingenuous of the ISB to say that there's confusion over what it means. I think the trouble is we all know exactly what it means. It means it's something you can rely on. And the trouble is that a valuation of this balance sheet date is not something you can rely on. It's true on that at that moment in time, but if anybody thinks it's something that's sustainable or can be relied on beyond that, that's obviously that's misleading. So I think the source of because I thought maybe we could rebuild reliability into it. And I've got a lot of sympathy with Peter's point that if one can placate people with some of this, restoring some of this language, then I think that's a good idea. But I think that there is a danger if you reinstate a word that means something that it's more than can be delivered. And perhaps it should be the other way around. You should say, well, we understand that people expect with reliability, but actually we need to remind people that it's a fair representation of the value on that day, so that it can't be dependent upon constants or something.
You know, this is part of where this comes from is that standard setters spend a whole lot of time worrying about words cause them problems, and what they're telling us is, and I hear this from sort of the practitioner side, and you get a bunch of users, preparers, and auditors together, and they go on and on about a single word just sends the whole process off. And I read this as reliability has caused problems, and it gets people use it and they don't use it in the right meaning. And so what they're saying is, let's use a new word, faithful representation, use something else. And sometimes we have to get rid of the old word because there's always so much baggage. Somebody said here today, let's banish the word fair value because it's got so much baggage that we can hardly use it anymore. And so part of this is the only way you can cut some of the history is to invent a new word. And so this is what they're doing. They're saying we've got to cut some history out. We're inventing new words. And so in the case of faithful representation, I think they've made a fairly good case that they need to cut them with the past, and certainly with prudence, they need to cut with the past and use another word.
Well, there are some subtle differences though, aren't there? I think stewardship, I think we can sort that one easily. I agree with you, Robert, that there are more differences here. So maybe perhaps we ought to debate one by one. So, but if we start with the reliability and faithful representation. Reliability has that extra bit which is can be depended upon, and there does seem to me to be some subtle difference between the old version, which says you could depend upon it, and the new version, which says it's complete, neutral, and free from error.
What happens to faithful representation term by itself? Doesn't that look like it can be also dependent upon because it faithfully represents that phenomenon, the transaction?
I don't
only what it purports to represent.
Yeah, it purports to represent that the term reliability is a
piece. The piece that I think we're missing in this conversation is, I suspect, and I don't know this, but I suspect that there are audit issues with around reliability when, in fact, what we users are really looking for... Just for a second, what we're really looking for is not, I don't think we're looking remember how these words will be used. What we're asking for is not reliable in the view. Think about what an auditor would say, this number is reliable, and then their gears spin, and you go, wait a minute, we're not asking for reliable in the auditor's vernacular. I think we're asking for faithful representation in an auditor's vernacular. I think that's the problem, but I don't know. I'm just speculating. We obviously want our numbers to be reliable, otherwise we can't use them. How can you build a model on an unreliable number? It's sort of silly.
But reliability, to make them, I can depend on it to represent only what it represents.
Yes, but
so it depended upon for what, and I think that's the point that somewhat gets missed. It can only, that fair value can only be depended on as the fair value of that debt.
When Mark is not open, because it's the last day.
but it's true of all of the numbers. You know, it's not just fair value. It's depreciation. It's everything.
And that's why faithful representation, I think, to me, conveys.
There's another issue. What about the accounting errors that go into, you know, all financial statements are full of errors all over the place. They're below the materiality, so the auditors, but you know, every real financial statement has got a lot of stuff wrong with it. And so is it really reliable? You know, yes, they managed to get it balanced to the penny, but there can be hundreds of thousands, in some cases millions of dollars of stuff that isn't right. So I'm not sure, it's faithfully representative, but it's wrong. We know it's wrong.
But there is no ultimate right specimen.
Thank you. The discussion about the prudence so far on this table, I think is influenced by the hate to the people who advocate the word prudence. I know that some people won't have the prudence in order to be, say, no to the fair valuing of some assets and liabilities, but forget about the profile and think about the word itself. I have a view that we should have the word prudence in the conceptual framework. Why? The current conceptual framework omits the word prudence, saying that it's in contrast with the neutrality. Then the question is, what is neutral? What is optimal, ideal neutral for financial statements and the financial markets? The discussion paper itself admits that preparers have the biases to be optimistic. So they make optimistic transactions, accounting transactions. In addition to that, my feeling is that the investors have the asymmetric responses to the good news or bad news caused by accounting treatments. So for example, when a company reverses its reserves or provisions and make gains, we say, oh, congratulations, and that's it, right? And then when the company, de-recognize assets by impairing it, then we say, what the hell? What else do you have? How much losses are you going to make next year? Then stock prices plunges, causing unnecessary volatility to the capital market, which is a cost for the macro economy. So I think the prudence is the one to make it the slightly right from the center, and which is the very, pragmatically speaking, the ideal neutrality for the capital markets. And you say, the standard setter said, well, it is in the standard level, but I don't think so, because this is a kind of the guarded, guiding star for the policy of the preparers and making the financial statement. It is a behavior guidance. Therefore, it should be written in the top of the conceptual framework as fairly
so
important.
So let me say, do you think that the conceptual framework should also be applied by preparers? Because a lot of this qualities are what the board will look at when it
decides. That is nonsense. I don't agree with that. Read up any textbook. Textbook of the IFRS, begin first page, conceptual framework.
Okay.
See, this is it. This is the life.
So you think that conceptual framework should also be...
Yeah, it's a very wide uses, very wide inferences. Therefore, I don't have this kind of sort of the symbolic word in the beginning of the conceptual framework.
I can understand the problem with prudence in terms of being a bias, as you were saying, Robert. You don't want people overstating liabilities and understating assets and creating hidden reserves. But the way that it was described in the sort of old conceptual framework was very much a prudence in the exercise of judgment, which is pretty much, I think, what Saichi is saying. As somebody making a judgment, we know that management are naturally optimistic, and the auditors, and therefore the sort of the standards and the conceptual framework, therefore all impose upon them a duty to be, if you like, cautious,
yes,
to work against their own natural sort of inclinations when deciding how much profit to book, and similarly to be cautious when deciding how much of a liability to recognise. They will naturally want to show a smaller liability because they think it will be all right, but the standard and the conceptual framework says, well, no, actually you've got to work harder to work out that it's a bit bigger than really you'd like to think it is. And the same with profit, maybe it's a bit smaller than you'd like to think it is.
May I ask a slightly different question? And let me preface it by reminding you that in the face of the financial crisis back in 2008, the IASB made a change in a standard under pressure from regulators. And many of you around this table soundly criticized the organization for its lack of independence and caving in to that pressure. And I hear many of you saying we should put prudence back, and there's a lot of good reasons why we might consider it. But now it's been linked in Brussels to our funding. And if we were to consider putting it back in, for the very good reasons that many of you cite, will we get that same reaction that we've lost our independence and we're caving in to pressure from the politicians? And will it inevitably lead to other jurisdictions who want other changes doing the same thing, saying, oh, well, we're going to cut your funding unless you eliminate fair value for financial instruments across the board?
I didn't say that, about the link to funding.
In terms of the political discussions, I think it's clearly made your job more difficult. I think there's no doubt about that. But it would be equally odd to do the wrong thing because it looked right. So I think you have to do the right thing. Clearly, sort of, you know, European politics has created a situation where you will then have to explain yourselves even more clearly. If you went down that path, you'd have to say, I know we've been put under pressure to do this. We actually think it's the right thing for the following reasons, and you sort of have to believe us that we're not responding to pressure. Some people would believe you, some people wouldn't. It would be wrong if you think it's the right thing to put, let's say, put prudence back. It's simple. If you think it's the right thing to put prudence back in the wording, then it would be wrong to just go, oh, well, we can't now because they're telling us to.
So, I agree with Peter. If you really think putting prudence back in is the right answer, then you should put prudence back in and do the right thing. On the other hand, the prudence you're being asked to put in is not the prudence that we're talking around the table. What you're talking about,
the prudence we took out that you're asking.
Well, they're asking you to put back the prudence that you took out on purpose. The prudence that you know we could argue, which is. And I'm not. There is this element. In fact, we were talking at this end of the table. It's sort of skepticism, or maybe even cynicism. And there's no question. There's a bias. But I believe that neutrality means neutrality means that you have exercised. God, I want to say this. You've exercised prudence in how you got to neutrality. But that's the. But that's not what they're talking about. One of the handouts we got, it was unbelievable how they said it was this. You read between the lines. What they really want is they do not want neutral. They really want the merge. They want excessive conservatism. They want something. They really want
smoothing.
I think the problem is it is coming from people that have other agendas, and they've picked on this piece as their way of getting other things to happen. And for those reasons,
let's hear from Jerry.
Sorry.
I agree. Prudence clearly can't mean smoothness, but I do think there are lots of examples where your accounting standards are prudent. I mean, the mixed measurement model is prudent. Yeah, inventory lower, cost per metric value realizable money is prudent, your impairment model is prudent, not as prudent as FASB, because they're going to deal the day one losses immediately, but it's still prudent compared to where we are now. And I think you need to be very clear, you know, what are the characteristics where you are asking for prudence in the standards that caused you to ask for a prudent outcome in the standard, and make sure you document those in the conceptual framework so you're allowed to have them in the standards. Because if you don't have prudence in your standard, when you come to revisit them, you'll be saying, hang on, that was prudent, we shouldn't have done that. So you do need, I think you need to be very careful how you create the right framework. But I think we're there. In terms of sort of reliability and faithful representation, I don't think I can get overly excited about it, although I do genuinely believe that the substance over form loss is a shame. Because I think there's so many examples of contracts being written to go to the legal form rather than reflect the economic substance that I find it deeply frustrating. And I think that's one of the problems with a balance sheet centric approach that you've adopted, is that you effectively say, well, what are my enforceable rights and obligations contractually? Therefore, that's what's on the balance sheet, and you start to lose sight of what is the economic substance of the transaction that sits behind it. And that then links me back to stewardship, and I see two fundamentally different forms of stewardship, and I think that's reflected in the way businesses are managed. Operational stewardship is fundamentally different to financial stewardship. Yeah. Operational stewardship is, and quite often businesses will have a chief finance officer and a chief operating officer, and their roles are completely distinct. The chief operating officer is, managing, customer relationships, making sure factories run smoothly, the HR functions working fine, and all the rest of it. The chief financial officer is looking at, my contractual, timelines for when debts fall due, am I going to be able to make those payments, what exactly are the terms in the leases, when I'm looking at my defined benefit plan, how am I matching my asset and liability, and those financial stewardship aspects are the things that are controlling, value shifts often between stakeholders that aren't necessarily operating in nature that reflect the underlying value of the business, but it reflects movements in interest rates and all sorts of things that are the remit of the financial officer. Did he refinance the debt at the right time? And stuff like that. Yes. And that is quite different. And I think it would be useful in the conceptual framework to try and craft something that describes that, because I think that will then be useful for you when you go to the financial statement presentation project to be able to bifurcate and create cohesiveness between operating and financing and getting the structure of your financial statements. Project, right?
What I did not like about prudence is that it's very difficult to define, and I think probably what is meant usually is conservatism. It has some sort of a conservatism, and if that is what is meant, let's call it something that is more neutral in its definition than prudence. If you look at how it used to be in the old conceptual framework, it's almost harmless. It says prudence, however, the exercise of prudence does not allow, for example, the creation of hidden reserve mechanisms. I mean, it was almost harmless, and it did not allow for those bad things we all do not want. I think you can make a statement that we expect preparers to follow the standard in a neutral way, to prepare a report complying with the standard in a neutral way, and that the standard setter can choose, depending on the subject, to be either neutral or prudent when deemed appropriate. But I think the preparer should prepare the financial statement in a neutral way according to the standard. The standard can choose to be prudent or conservative or not. And then you bring a new dimension to something I set up with. I think this distinction between standard and how to apply a standard is not clear in the conceptual framework, and maybe this is a way out.
And implicit in the reason that the standard would be, that the board would be prudent, is because they're leaning against a tendency for overstatement, or I think the reason we want prudence, for those of us who want to read them, I'll say it. For those of us that want prudence, what we're really trying to do is we're trying to balance between management's over-optimism on, and that's what we're trying at. But the problem is if you do it at the preparer level,
that doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Right.
So when the board determines prudence, I'm just thinking of it in terms of practical aspects. Determining discount rates, should they be more prudent so that the outcome would be more prudent, or should they try to? I'm just thinking of.
Well, I think a better example might be a sort of level 3 evaluation.
Okay.
Where you've got essentially sort of no or very intangible market inputs, and a lot of it is just based on your model. And you will come up with quite a broad range of outcomes based on some fairly reasonable scenarios. And I think what prudence is saying to you is when you exercise the judgment, A, in creating the model, and then B, in deciding where in that range you eventually pick, because
yep.
you've got to pick a spot number,
yep.
That you don't just go for the middle, because that might sound neutral,
yep.
but you exercise skepticism, I think, as Robert was putting it. So you say, well, reasonable range of scenarios in here and here, but actually we have a sense that, generally speaking, things come out here,
yep.
rather than
there.
And now you just put it back in Diane's management,
because
that isn't what the standard says.
Management make that judgment, and then the auditors have to review it.
I'm just thinking how the IASB would apply if you decide to write a standard.
So
well, I think Martin said you may, if you say we've decided in this standard
yep.
to be neutral
yep.
for the following reasons, because we're trying to defer that in, or whatever the answer is, that's one thing. We're being prudent here because we're doing historical cost accounting, and
I think that what's really going on here is we want the result to be neutral. In some cases, and you put it out quite correctly, in some cases, to get what we think is going to be a neutral answer, the board has done something that we've been quote unquote prudent in the way we set up our standards. I think the logic behind that is they're leaning against the wind, and they're doing it consciously because they know that there's going to tend to be an overstatement. That doesn't hurt my concept of ultimately we're trying to be neutral.
On a few of those things. One is thinking about pieces that are always, there's a wide range of estimates. To me, neutrality means going for the one whether you call it a confidence range or not, it's still got to be the best estimate. And to actually even think, well, we'll take the best estimate, but we'll build in a little bit of margin for error on the conservative side. I mean, it's still taking you down the conservative room. So to me, neutrality, best estimate, unbiased, just even when, so that you exercise caution. The more uncertain the outcome, the more caution will have to be exercised. But I'm still not sure that bringing in prudence, the word prudence helps there. In terms of risk leaning against managerial optimism, that is the auditor's role, and there's absolute reams being written on how they're supposed to exercise professional scepticism. I should say you never have to train journalists to exercise professional scepticism, and because they do it naturally, and it's a bit alarming that auditors have to keep being reminded what it means. They obviously don't understand the answer. But that is the price we pay, actually, for a system whereby we allow the companies to hire the auditor, as opposed to us. We should actually do it ourselves. That would be the single thing you could do to actually get leaning against the management. But that said, we are where we are. I would rather discount for that as an analyst, knowing that the auditors, it gives me quite a lot of assurance, but I know all those internal pressures, than build in, have standards which say, that you should err on the side of conservatism, you know, find the best answer and then take off, what, 5%, 10%, you know, you just don't go there. And actually, if you've got an answer that's already a bit uncertain, see, and then you're putting some sort of spin on the uncertainty, it actually gets worse. Then just finally on stitches, Jed, I think you said something really important about that. In terms of we're thinking about throwing some bones to the opponents, why not reiterate substance over form? I would have thought that would be less difficult than reiterating reliability, I would have thought, and certainly less contentious than some of the previous.
Just on that last point, that substance over form is there. It's not using those particular words because it's felt that faithful representation already says that.
That's a classic, then it's like stewardship, just put it
in. You've done the same thing as stewardship, and in the context that it's used, I actually think that it's, I agree with you. I think it would be helpful to lean against the wind again, but I think it would be helpful to have that there more explicitly because it is a pervasive problem.
Can I ask one more question? Because we're way over time, but these chapters in the conceptual framework of 2010 are converged with the FASB. Clearly, the rest of what we're doing won't be we're going out there on our own, and it's unclear what they're going to do with their conceptual framework. But do you have any concerns about us changing something that was a converged set of objectives and qualitative characteristics?
We are not asking you in substance, none of the suggestions we're making change the substance at all. And we have this illusion of, it's so funny, we have standards that we believe are converged and they're not. Remember, the financial instrument standard was supposed to be exactly converged, different words, but exactly converged, and it turned out to be not. I think it's your choice. The rest of the conceptual framework won't be converged, so if a couple of paragraphs are converged, does it really matter? Probably not. Yes, we'd rather have it the same, but you're not I don't think you're changing anything. I don't think that should be a strong argument on either side.
I also think that it's a bit disappointing to read, we're not going to change chapters 1 and 3, then to have the sort of prospect of, well, we might do some tinkering with it, and separately from the three things we've been talking about, some of the other stuff that to do with the conceptual framework might throw up things which would necessitate a bit of a change to chapters 1 and 3. I think you should just be willing to change chapters 1 and 3 and not all that out at the beginning.
I'd like to make comments in a way that the second part of it follows on from something Jane said. I think the first thing is, if you recommend to us in your comment letters, and I hope you're all going to be involved in comment letters to us, that we should change some things or reopen some things in chapters 1 and 3, it would be helpful if you could spell out as clearly as possible what you think we should change and also what consequences you think it will have for the rest of the framework. Because part of the difficulty here is I think some people have asked for things, not in this room, but some people are asking for things which won't necessarily have any effect, or people don't really know whether they'll have any effect. And I don't think we want to spend time sort of crafting changes if it doesn't really matter in the end. It's not the most productive use of time. The other thing is that I think for some of these topics, particularly prudence, it applies to some extent to the others as well, is there is quite a wide range of things people are actually asking for there under the same label. And I think if we do reopen some of these things, there's a danger we can spend a long time trying to figure out exactly what different groups want. You know, we might throw some bones out and it might turn out the bones were never going to satisfy the people they were aimed at. And we could consume a lot of time on this and it might end up not being very productive. And so that's something just from project management points of view that we want to avoid as well.
Well, on the other hand, it's up to the ISB to say, well, in this stage we are still not going to change 1 and 3, and we take our comments and revisit, first finish the other chapters before again looking at 1 and 3. That's a procedural way of approach, and then still I think the comments would be welcome. I think you justly manage the expectations by saying, well, we will take notice of them, but we just did it. So, I mean, I think it was quite... It's not in concrete that you're not going to change one and three.
All the suggestions I've heard around the table, I think, are form over substance. I think there's subtleties. And I'm not saying that, you know, your stewardship. Yeah, we're not really changing the definition of anything, so why not throw in stewardship because it resonates to a certain part of the group. Form over substance is a problem. It clearly is a faithful representation. I think you're right, but it doesn't hurt adding it in. But from a project management point of view, if you're really not changing anything, then why go through the aggravation? And I think we've said, well, if it calms down some political constituents, maybe. But I think you're right. If you throw them, it's unlikely. Those of us who are reasonable, or those people who actually understand what it means, you throw it in, they're going to say, okay, fine, and it's not going to help all the people that want to have it. So I'm not sure you'll get anything from your moments.
We might have to close this session. I think probably a short break is the best thing that we can suggest at this point. Does anyone have a hard sort of stop at 4:45, which is when we had planned to be done with the closed session? Because I think we've got a bit to talk about in that session. Okay. Good. So we might
extend
a bit more. So back 3:30 for the next bit on liability.